It's great to see everyone here today, especially the visitors. Always happy to have you here with us. If you're following along this morning, we're going to be in the 12th chapter of Luke and dealing with verses 13 through 24. Now, a big city lawyer was representing the railroad in a lawsuit filed by an old rancher. The old rancher's prize bull was missing from the section through which the railroad passed. The rancher only wanted to be paid a fair value for the bull. Now, the case was scheduled to be tried before the Justice of the Peace in the back room of the old general store. The attorney for the railroad immediately cornered the rancher and tried to get him to settle out of court. The lawyer did his best-selling job, and finally the rancher agreed to take half of what he was asking. After the rancher had signed the release papers and he took the check, the young lawyer couldn't help himself but brag and gloat over his success. He told the rancher, "You know, I hate to tell you this, old man, but I put one over on you out there. I couldn't have won the case. The engineer was asleep, and the fireman was in the caboose when the train went through your ranch that morning. I didn't have one witness to put on the stand. I bluffed you." The old rancher looked at him and replied, "Well, I tell you, young fella, I was a little worried about winning that case myself because that bull came home this morning." You know, every day our lives are being pulled in a number of different directions. On one hand, we have family responsibilities pulling us one way, and our obligations to the church pulling us another, and friends pulling us in yet another. And we're left wondering what's really important in life. And, you know, a lot of people think that getting ahead and putting one over on other people and, being successful in business is, you know, the way to be successful in this world. It's not quite like that. The passages that we're going to look at today in the book of Luke compels us to look at them and make a decision about the life we want to have in our life. As Thomas was talking about in class this morning, you know, our life here is just a little blip on eternity. It matters very little in the grand scheme of things, because we're going to spend a lot more time in eternity than we'll ever spend on this old earth. Now, sometimes it seems long, especially for the kids that are in school. It seems forever from Monday to Friday. But it is a short time when you think in terms of eternity. So, do we want a life dependent on things that makes us comfortable in this life, riches and everything, with no guarantee, you know, from the world that we're going to be close to God or even have a relationship with God after that? The passage that we're going to read is very relevant today because most people in America, their main priority in life is to attain all they can and to have that good life, no matter what means necessary to get that. And we're bombarded by television shows like Lives of the Rich and Famous and others that celebrate this life of excess, of hedonism, of just, you know, doing what you want to do, and that the only thing that matters is what we get out of it, and others don't matter very much. So, everyone's trying to do something bigger and better and different, and especially in our American society, the distance between comfortable and covetousness is not all that great sometimes. Now, Jesus is in the middle of a sermon, teaching his disciples to fear God alone, when he suddenly is interrupted by a man who's dissatisfied over what he considers a fair division of his father's estate between himself and his brother. He is still obviously fuming so much that he ignored what the Lord and Savior is saying, you know, and trying to impart some knowledge upon his disciples and those listening. The man says in verse 13, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Now, let's read our scripture before we get too far in here. It's Luke 12, starting in verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentiful, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I'll do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is it the one who lays up treasures for himself and is not rich towards God? He goes on, and he said to disciples in verse 22, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Oh, how much more value are you than the birds? So, we see this man, and we've seen this before, innumerable families that you could list that have been destroyed over things like inheritance. It seems like the only ones that stay happy are the ones that their parents passed away with pennies to their name, and there was really nothing to divide. But this man, because he's fuming about it, asked Jesus during the middle of his sermon, tell my brother to divide my inheritance with him. And Jesus doesn't answer him, you know, like we would think Jesus would. Instead, Jesus, he doesn't make a legal judgment. He makes a moral one at that time. Now, he knew that this family feud was not one over inheritance, but a symptom of a greater problem, greed. In fact, the you in verse 14 is plural, indicating that both brothers had a problem with greed. As long as both brothers are suffering from greed, no settlement would be satisfactory. And that's obvious. If you got two brothers, one father, it gets split down the middle. But then it gets where someone wants to get a little bit more than the other one, and the other one doesn't agree. Well, if they both agree on half, that seems like a fair and equitable thing. But neither one of them were amenable to that agreement. And that's their problem. And greed is one of the single most things that drives America's economy and the economy abroad. And that's not talking about, you know, trying to be as prosperous as we can, as inventive as we can, and doing our best to do a good job or do a good service to our neighbor if we're self-employed. It's about trying to get something that's not earned by us. Jesus tells him that the most important thing is not for him to solve his problem, but that his heart be changed. But if we're honest, how often have we gone to God asking Him to change our situation rather than asking Him to change our heart? Most of the time is, God, can you do this for me? God, can you do that for me? Instead of, God, help me to deal with my present situation and help me to get through it. And I know that you'll make things better as soon as you can. It's generally, God, can you do this for me? Now, I would say that most of our prayers, is that God would solve a problem in our lives. Financial, illness, or family, or whatever. Perhaps we should pray, God, here is my problem. Please change my heart. Please help me to go through this trial. And I know you'll get me out on the other end. And I know that your solution is better than anything I can think of now. In verse 15, Jesus says, and he said to him, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. And, you know, we're like that. We like to collect things. We like to things that we like to see around us. But they don't make us who we are. Riches will not make us a better person than we are. If we're not a very nice person, money is not going to give us a charm lesson or a courtesy lesson or anything like that. It might even make us worse. So we're not what we possess. When he says, take heed, beware, he is literally saying, be on guard against all kinds of greed. And that's important because it's so easy to creep into our lives. It's so easy to feel, you know, vexed by someone else and want to get, you know, the upper hand in that situation. So the area of danger for this man, greed and covetousness, the Greek word is plexnexia, which means the lust of having more than one's fair share. a grasping for more that is never satisfied. And that's how it is. I mean, we see people all the time. They've got tons of money, but it's not enough, and they keep questing for it, and they keep accumulating it. And, you know, the kind of like Solomon in Ecclesiastes, you know, pretty soon you learn it's not all it's cracked up to be. It comes with a lot of headaches, a lot of misery. In Proverbs 21 and 26, Proverbs chapter 21, verse 26, it speaks to this very problem when it says, "They are always greedy for more, while the godly love to give." The writer of Ecclesiastes said about the greedy in Ecclesiastes 5:10, "Those who love money will never have enough. How absurd to think that wealth brings true happiness." Now, you know the old saying, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but in a sense it's kind of true. Money might not buy happiness, but it buys most everything else. Certainly, you know, we can pay off some bills or buy some nice things with money, but they don't bring true happiness. I always like to say that life deals us enough miseries and sorrow, but happiness we make on our own. We have to decide that what God has given us and our relationship with God is enough to get us through whatever trials we got in this world. It's not exactly what we think, as the writers did here, but how many of us think if we could win the Publisher's Clearinghouse? Now, that kind of faded from view nowadays, but that was a big deal. It was always the Publisher's Clearinghouse. You know, then we could have the good life, and that's what people think. And they quest after that, and they spend money on you know, gambling and lotteries and everything like that, thinking that in the end, if they could just win, that would make their life complete. And for so many people, if their life was a wreck before, this was like putting it in the crusher at the junkyard and turning the car into a little cube, because it really crushed it after that. Think of a shipwrecked sailor on a life raft in the middle of an ocean. Now, they tell you not to drink the salt water, and there's a good reason for that. But he goes on in his terrible thirst. He just gives in and he starts drinking the salt water. But it only makes him thirstier, which makes him thirstier still. The salt really dehydrates us. So, in effect, he's just compounding the situation, and it spirals down until he consumes enough salty water and dies. Now, Jesus gives this admonition. "One's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions, but greed tries to convince us of the opposite, that what we possess is important." Malcolm Forbes once said, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." And I've seen that sign before, and that's pretty popular with people that like to accumulate things. And Mr. Forbes has since passed away, and he now knows this is not true, because all those toys went to other people. All that he earned went to other people. And now, for eternity, what's the most important thing that he's thinking about at this moment? That the one with the most toys doesn't win. But the one whose life is dedicated to Christ, who loves Christ and follows Christ and obeys Christ and does all that he says and lives their life avoiding sin, repenting of sin when they commit those sins and doing the will of the Father. For them, all the riches they ever wanted, more than Forbes or Gates or Trump or any of these fellows have, they have more in abundance than that could ever be. Starting in verse 16 is what's referred to as the parable of the rich fool, in which the Lord gives us five principles of what happens when our hearts are focused exclusively on ourselves. The first thing in verse 16 is that greed does not give credit to God. You know, it's the often thing that we see is that when people are in disasters and they all run to pray to God, and they all run and go to God for comfort and everything like that. But when times are good, they don't even consider God. They're just kind of like happy clams, just marching along in their lives, enjoying the abundance of what they have, never considering that all that comes from God. And sometimes you have to wonder if God's not giving them a little reminder by showing that things can get bad, that things can get a little worse. The man spoke about the richness of his soil and the plentifulness of his crops. And oh, he felt good. We all feel good when our bank account's nice and fat and happy, and we all fret whenever it gets down to the pennies and the dollars sometimes, as it does. The second thing in verse 17 and 18 is that greed plans without considering God. Now, it's very often, Sharon's grandfather, he always said, Lord willing, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. He would never think of making a plan without considering God. Now, you know, I think it's a good idea and it's a good saying that we need to kind of remember each and every day. But by the grace of God, there I go. There I go through life, only by His grace. You know, people want to accuse God of things and get mad at God when He doesn't fulfill their wildest dreams, but that's not what God's here for. So this man in verse 17 and 18 says, I'm going to tear down my barns. I'm going to build bigger barns. And then I'm going to sit back in the lawn chair underneath the umbrella and enjoy myself and kick my feet up. I've got a lot. I can relax now. So he's confused, the farmer, between ownership and stewardship. And in fact, we don't really own anything. If you got a mortgage on a house, somebody else owns that. If you own it outright and don't pay the taxes, guess who owns it after that? Big old government. We don't own ourselves. We don't have anything that we can call that we're truly free, where someone doesn't have some sort of control over us. And it's that same way. All our possessions, if we believe they've been given by God, then we're not going to forget where our blessings come from. And we're not going to forget who sustains us. In verse 19, we see that greed only serves itself. He says to his soul, you see what he says? My soul, my being, this is what got me here. My superior farming methods to my neighbors got me these big crops. And aren't I special? Well, you know, if your farming methods were better and you're a smarter man than the other fellow, who gave you those smarts? Who gave you that wisdom? If your ground is better than the other fellows, well, who gave you that ground? You know, you're going to pass from this earth and it's going to go to somebody who didn't work for it. And that's the way it works. So, greed only serves himself there. The book of James speaks to such an attitude in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. And he says, come now, you who say tomorrow or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? Is it even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away? You know, it's kind of like whenever you put a kettle on the stove to boil. Here comes the steam out of it. As soon as you take the heat away from that kettle, you don't see that vapor anymore. It's that quick. And when our life leaves us, and even if it's 100 years, even if it's 120 years, even if you could live to 130 and be the oldest person that ever lived. I don't know what the oldest person that ever lived is, but I'm guessing that's pretty much close to it. It's still nothing in eternity's eyes. In verse 15 of James 4, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. You know, the Bible does not discourage us from looking at the future with great expectation. Paul made plans, but I know Paul always considered that it was going to happen if God wanted it to happen. And if he had difficulties getting there, well then so be it. He would do his best to work around that and do what he needed to do. So the Bible doesn't discourage us from looking to the future, but it encourages us to look at God before we even consider those plans. Are those plans in line with God's will? Is it going to glorify God? And not to say that it's going to be some great Oedipus to, you know, or a big billboard to God, you know, praising and stuff like that, but that we do it with Christian values. That we, if our success is there, that it's not violating Christian values in order to do so. and that God gets the credit for whatever we do. Give God the credit when things are good, and He won't forget us when things are bad. So, in other words, we need to plan with humility. Not like we control things, but that God is in control. So, you know, those things come into play with everything we consider. You know, in the retirement, we try to save up for it, but, you know, things can happen to that too. Things can make that go away. So, we need to be careful with our boasting. Also, in verse 23, focuses on now, not the future. But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then those whose those things be which you have provided." So, the man is pronounced a fool, which is aphron, the Greek word by God. A fool in biblical language was not a description of a mental disability, but of a spiritual discernment. Had nothing to do with someone's mental capacity. According to Scripture, a fool is a man who leaves God of any consideration. In Psalm 14:1, the psalmist wrote in chapter 14, in verse 1, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God." This man is a fool not because he has said this, but because he has lived his life as if God did not exist. He is a fool in that he did not recognize that his material blessings came from God, nor did he recognize any obligation to God because of those possessions. The person that thinks he made it on his own doesn't feel any obligation to give it to any church or charity or give it to anything that God sanctions. They leave God out of their lives. Greed is a logical belief that there is no life after death. We grab what we can while we can because we don't believe there's anything after that. So, we need to consider where our everything comes from. The whole universe and everything in it came from God's hand, from His speaking it into existence. And we just hold on to it for a little while, like a vapor surrounding it, and then we're gone. In verse 21, greed does not have God's plans in mind. He says, "So is he who lays up treasure for himself is not rich towards God." And you know, riches is kind of one of our greatest weaknesses. You know, it does pay the bills. It does make us feel comfortable. It does bring a lot to us when we need it. But it's not going to make us happy. It's not going to make us more spiritual. It's not going to make us strong towards God. And it's not going to help lead us to salvation. Quite the opposite. It'll probably lead us astray from that. You know, the world offers us a carrot on a stick. Fueled by greed, many run after it. And occasionally someone catches it. But then they find out it's not what they thought it would be. But God offers us real treasure. If we learn the difference between God's treasure and this world's treasure, our life is going to be a lot more happier, more joyful, and more content in everything that we do. I don't know what your condition is this morning, but if you have need of the church, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?